have to take a deep breath when I think about this, how I'm feeling, what I'm going through, how my body feels, how my mind feels. Not being able to dance, not being able to create or perform as freely as I want to. It's very difficult during this time, you know, knowing what other people are going through, what other people have lost.
That's dancer Omari Wiles in an excerpt from the docuseries, Isolation to Creation. And this is Artworks, the weekly podcast from the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Josephine Reed. Before the pandemic shut down performing arts venues, Works in Process, the performing arts series at New York City's Guggenheim Museum, was one of the hottest tickets around. Begun in 1984, Works in Process did just that. It attempted to unveil the creative process of performing artists. Held in a 283-seat theater beneath the rotunda of the Guggenheim, Works in Process produced approximately 60 performances a year. Each performance would begin with an excerpt of a work in process, followed by a discussion with the artist. It served as a laboratory of sorts for artists to test their ideas and for audiences to take a deep dive into the artist's thinking. And then the pandemic hit, and Works in Process had to innovate if it was going to continue its mission of supporting performing artists and their work. Well, let me jump to the chase. Works in Process rose to the challenge, and one of the results is the docuseries, Isolation to Creation. The general manager of the program, Duke Dang, is with me to talk about that journey. But we begin with Duke explaining what a typical Works in Process event was like back in the days when we could still gather.
Yeah, so all of our performances are 70 minutes long, and we always open the performance with an excerpt. You know, we've all been in these circumstances where we start talking about a performance or a work of art, and if you haven't seen it or if you're not familiar with it, automatically you're out of the conversation because you don't know what the reference point is. So at Works in Process, it's important for us to collectively, artists and audiences, to all see performance excerpts so that we have a shared point of departure, so that we're all on the same page and nobody is ever left out of the conversation. And so we start off with a short excerpt, and the artist will talk about what they're trying to achieve, what they're trying to do. And through this conversation, the audience is able to glean some insight so that when they see the work, they understand the intention of the artist. Oftentimes, it's the very first time that a creator is seeing their work in front of a live audience. So they get to see how an audience reacts to this work. So hopefully, by the time the work premieres, the creator understands that relationship between the audience and the artist.
Something that is always interesting to me, and I never feel is quite explored enough, and that is that relationship between, among actually, the audience, the artist, and the actual work of art. And the audience, you know, those early audiences really have an impact. Artists learn if something lands or if it doesn't, or if an audience is not taking it the way that the artist meant. And it might mean that the direction of the piece changes. It might mean the artist goes with the audience, responds. You know, it shakes out in so many different ways.
I couldn't agree more. And actually, what this pandemic has taught us, one of the things that it has taught us, is that when you go to a performance, it is a group activity. It's this exchange between audience to audience, audience to artist. And that's what we have been lacking, haven't we, during this pandemic? Mm-hmm.
We're all at home watching a screen, and we're not feeling the energy of a room. And when an artist is in the studio creating, they don't get to feel that energy of a room either. So asking an artist to perform excerpts in a theater at Works in Process, they get to feel the energy of an audience before the premiere, so they have a chance to test and refine what they are creating.
How do you choose the artists to perform? Are they mostly New York-based artists, or is it more of a national effort casting a wider net? How do you choose?
Initially, when the program was created in the 80s and the 90s, most of the artists that were presented were New York-based, and we partnered with mostly New York organizations that were commissioning new works. And we would have these Works in Process programs prior to premiere. Over time, we really expanded the program to highlight what was happening not only nationally, but also internationally. We really wanted to provide a more national scope, and also we wanted to share the breadth of artistic creation that was happening, not just only in New York City, but nationally. And then over the past 3 to 4 years, we really sought to broaden what representation could be. So we expanded beyond modern and ballet and opera to include tap and then street dance and vogue and ballroom. And on the music front, we started to present cabaret, more experimental operas. And right before the pandemic hit, we were presenting a beatbox program because we really wanted to bring in new audiences, but also we wanted to leverage the platform of the Guggenheim to start to increase representation of these art forms that were underrepresented.
I'm curious how Works in Process changed over the past year because of the pandemic. Because, boy, last March hit the performing arts like a ton of bricks.
Yes, you can say that again. Well, when the pandemic hit, we really had to think about what our mission is and how we continue that mission. And our mission has always been to support the creative process of artists. And even though we couldn't gather audiences and artists, we said we could still find a way to support artists right now, especially as we were hearing from so many that they were facing cancellations left and right from presenters, producers. And so the first thing that we did was we said we can commission these artists to create works, to provide them with creative and financial support. And it was through the medium of digital performances. We provided artists with fees and we said, create anything that you want to create that expresses your work. Just do it while you're social distancing and we will digitally present these works. So we launched our virtual commissions program in March. It's now January, and we've premiered over 80 works on that platform, and we've supported over 200 artists.
But that was just a first step, and I know Works in Process really expanded its thinking about the way it wanted to work with artists during the pandemic.
Yes, we knew that that was a Band-Aid for a situation that was much more severe. And that's when we really started to think, how do we make it possible for artists to continue to work? How do we support their creative process? And that was when we came on the idea of a quarantine creative bubble.
Well, describe this quarantine creative bubble. What does that even mean?
It means that we bring artists together so that they can work, but we do it safely.
Well, how do you do that?
We have the artists quarantine for 7 days before they enter the bubble. During those 7 days, we rapid test the artists 2 times, 4 days before they enter the bubble and on the day that they enter the bubble. Addition to this, we rapid test the bus driver. And then after everybody has the all clear with the negative tests, everybody gets onto the bus. They drive onto a residency center that is sits on over 150 acres, and they work and live in complete isolation. And for many of these artists, it's the first time that they've been able to touch another human being, be in the same room and perform and work. And that was what we created in June, and we executed that model in August, making it possible for artists to come together and work again. It wasn't easy. We didn't have the information that we have now, but fortunately we were working with Dr. Wendy Zajcek, who was supporting us on serial testing and helping us create the medical protocol. And so that's how this bubble residency model came about.
Now, how long did the residency last?
It depends on the bubble, but between 10 to 14 days.
And this is in the Hudson Valley. And when you say the artists are isolated, they're together, but isolated from all other people.
Correct. In our first cycle, which lasted August, September, and October of 2020, we partnered with three residency centers: Katzbahn Cultural Park in Tivoli, New York, in Dutchess County. Katzbahn sits on over 150 acres. It's completely isolated. There are three studios. There are 16 rooms with ensuite baths. The artists all had their own rooms, their own bathrooms, and they had devoted studio time. And only the artists that had gone through this medical protocol could enter into the bubble. And so it was a virus-free environment. We also partnered with the Petronia Residency Center in Round Top, New York. And the Petronia Residency Center actually sits on 170 acres. And our third residency partner was Mount Tremper Arts in Mount Tremper, New York, in Ulster County. And Mount Tremper also sits on 170 acres. And having that acreage and that physical and geographical isolation ensured that we truly would have a barrier to any vulnerabilities or any puncture so that we could have a COVID virus-free environment for these artists to work in.
And you also made the decision that you were going to film the artists, and this would become a docuseries called Isolation to Creation. Tell me about that decision and how you came to it and why and how you did it safely.
It is so important for us to document this for a number of reasons. First, we wanted to see this from an artist's perspective. Due to COVID guidelines, also, we only had a film crew of one, so we had to capture more footage. And to do this, we gave the artists cameras so they could film themselves. In times of crisis, artists have the ability to reflect the world that we live in. So we wanted to document that. Second, because we couldn't gather audiences and artists, we wanted to create a docuseries so that audiences can take this journey with these artists and experience the hope and the joy and the exhilaration and the challenges of going back into the studio after months of isolation and not being able to perform, work, create collectively. Third, for us as an organization that has always presented the creative process and allowed audiences to go behind the scenes, this was, we felt, the most effective way of doing this during a time when we all can't physically gather. And we were very, very fortunate in that we were able to partner with WNET's All Arts to provide a distribution platform. So on January 27th, we will premiere this series nationwide on a streaming platform of All Arts. But here in the New York metropolitan region, the series will also be broadcast on TV.
I saw not the finished cut, but an almost finished cut of it. And oh my God, it was just fabulous. It really was. It was mostly dancers, though not exclusively. And the range of dancers was really extraordinary, from ballet to voguing.
Yes. You know, what we're very proud of is that all of these projects, we were already committed to them before the pandemic, because we knew that we had to be a part of shaping what representation can look like. And we looked around at our peer organizations and we said, what is lacking in the performing arts presentation world? And we realized that New York City was where club culture, where house dance, house music was created. Yet this culture was not being provided the platform of dance concert. And so we commissioned Efrat Ashery, who is a B-girl, who is a member of the house dance community, to create a piece called Underscored.
Wait, before you go on, will you tell me a bit about Underscored?
Underscored is inspired by the underground club culture that came of age in New York City in the 70s and 80s. And fortunately, the creators of that culture, they're still alive. And these elders were invited into the creative process to share their stories with a younger generation of club heads. And this culture is distinctly American, distinctly New York. So we had commissioned that piece in 2018, provided a residency in 2019, and we're planning on premiering the work in 2020, but the pandemic hit. And we couldn't stop supporting this project. We had to find a way to continue to support the project. And so we had Efrat Ashery Dance enter a bubble.
Another project that the docuseries featured was New York is Burning, which I loved. What's the history of that project?
It was inspired by the iconic documentary Paris is Burning, which follows families within the Vogue ballroom community. When I say family, these are the chosen families, because many of these marginalized GLBT individuals, often from Black and Brown communities, were ostracized from their families. And this was in the 80s. And they came together in houses to compete and represent and to perform. And for the 30th anniversary of this documentary, we wanted to invite a legendary member from the Vogue ballroom community to create a piece in homage of that work. And so we invited Omari Wiles, the founding father of the House of Orici, to create New York is Burning in 2019. We were supposed to premiere it in 2020. And again, the pandemic stalled the project in its tracks. But we said we had to find a way to continue to support this project. And we didn't know that it would be this way, but it was rather prescient in that those Black and Brown marginalized communities that were a part of Paris is Burning, well, those are the communities that now they're facing the brunt of the pandemic.
And I just have to give a shout out to Music from the Soul with Leonardo Sandoval and Gregory Richardson, because that's just a remarkable combination of music and tap where the dancing is absolutely part of the music. I mean, they're not dancing to the music, they are the music.
Yes, yes. And that's why we commissioned Music from the Soul. It was just this beautiful marriage where you just didn't know when the tap turned into music and when the music was part of the dance. And also, tap is traditionally a Black art form. And so many of the tap dancers that are presented now are not Black. And so when we met Leonardo Sandoval, we said, this is very exciting to have a tap choreographer who is Black to be able to champion his work. So those are just three of the six bubbles that are featured in Isolation to Creation. But we're very, very proud of these pieces. And we hope that when we all can safely gather, actually, I shouldn't say that we hope, we will, when we can safely gather, present the official premieres of these works at the Guggenheim.
In the beginning was very scary, like it was cancellation after cancellation.
One after the other after the other.
Dates just started falling like dominoes, and it was like chaos, you know?
Not knowing when we were gonna be able to work again.
It was a reality check. It was a shocker.
You know, I was so touched, Duke, when I was watching the documentary, the docuseries, I should say, how the artists were expressing what happened when everything shut down last March. And, you know, I work in the arts endowment. I know that this is true, but it just still so deeply tore at my heart. The fear, the confusion, the open-endedness of it, I think, is the thing that's so disturbing, especially for dancers. Their instrument is their body, and their body has to stay in shape. It's not like you can just pick it. And that's true for musicians, too. Nobody can just pick something up after a year and say, okay, back to where I was.
Yes, the stories that I've heard are completely heartbreaking. It was August when we had our first bubble residency, and a dancer said to me,
I was applying for unemployment insurance, and it took me forever. It was a godsend to have the $600 enhancement from the federal government. But when it ended, my New York State unemployment insurance only provided $154 a week, and I just couldn't live on $154 a week. This artist is a street dancer, and he said, "So I did what I knew. The only thing I knew to do at that point was to go into the subway and perform for tips." And when I heard that, my heart just broke, because it's August. We don't know anything about the virus. And he's going into the subways to perform for tips. And then he said, "And I tried for a few days. And because nobody was taking the subways, I wasn't making money. And to make matters worse, the police asked me to leave the subway."
So he said this bubble residency came at just the right time, because the compensation that you're providing me is helping me with my livelihood at a time when I need it most, but also it's providing not only me with hope, but it's providing the community that I am a part of with hope, that people care about us, that people are watching over us. So it's so important that we as arts administrators don't forget that the reason why we exist is for these artists. And so we have to do everything that we can to make it possible for these artists to work.
How did you get into the arts, Duke?
I've always loved the arts. I did my undergrad at Boston University, and I studied art history. I had multiple internships at the Smithsonian, at Glimmerglass, at the Guggenheim, at the Getty Center. And I found this niche of the performing arts in museums. I'd always loved both the visual and the performing arts. I really couldn't decide where I wanted to be. I wanted it all. And fortunately, I found this niche of working in the performing arts in a museum setting.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah. And then I went on to NYU for my master's, where I studied performing arts administration. And so I've always have had an appreciation for the performing arts. I never was a performer. I never was an artist myself. And I see it as what I do best, make it possible for these artists to do what they do best.
Duke, you're somebody who really loves the visual arts as well as museum arts. So you have an understanding of the cross-pollination that artists need to have with one another that enhances creativity on all levels. And that's something else that's very difficult for artists right now.
It really is. And I think that this pandemic has pointed out that we as human beings, we need to connect as well. Not only do the artists need to connect and cross-pollinate, but we as individuals need to connect. And so it's about finding ways for that to safely happen. And that's what these bubble residencies are able to do. And by having this docuseries, we are hoping that the public will be able to experience these stories, take this journey with these artists, and see how important it is for them to work, for them to create, for them to inspire and be inspired. These artists are our friends. They're our neighbors. They need our help right now. And they're going to play an incredible and outsized role in helping us heal from the events of this past year and helping revitalize the economy.
Works in process. Man, you guys did a pivot so quickly. I'm just very admiring of that. So good on you.
Oh, thank you. You know, ultimately it's the mission of our organization. We support works, we support process, we support artists in new work, regardless of what the headwinds are, what we're facing. It's that mission that we drill down into that propels us, that keeps us working, that provides us with the direction.
Well, thank you. Thank you for doing that. And thank you for giving me your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Joe.
You're welcome. That was Duke Dang. He's the general manager of Works and Process, the performing arts series at the Guggenheim Museum. The docuseries, Isolation to Creation, has begun streaming at allarts.org. And if you're in the New York metro area, you can find it on All Arts TV. Just check your local listings. You've been listening to Artworks, produced at the National Endowment for the Arts. Subscribe to Artworks and then leave us a rating on Apple, because it helps people to find us. Keep up with the Arts Endowment by following us on Twitter at NEA Arts, or by checking out our website at arts.gov. For the National Endowment for the Arts, I'm Josephine Reed. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.